Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
It is such an enormous privilege to sit in this open house chair and introduce to you all sorts of fascinating people from all over the world, making a real difference in that world, like Peter Sumrall. Peter was born in the Philippines. His father was the renowned world evangelist, Dr. Lester Sumrall. When his father died, Peter took over the important work of La C Broadcasting and charity work. He's in Australia as part of the C3 Presence Conference, specifically in his role heading up the global Feed the Hungry organisation. Peter Sumrall, welcome to Open House.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks very much for coming in. My guess is when lots of people hear the phrase feed the hungry, they'd wonder how on earth do you start doing that? Give us a sketch of what your organization does, where it does it.
We work all over the world. We were founded in the United States, but quickly spread to other places around the world and offices like here in Australia and Hong Kong and Germany and the UK and Canada. And our mission strictly is to feed the hungry. It's a vision that was given to my father back in November of 1987 while we were visiting in Jerusalem on a tour. And all of a sudden, one night he was awakened by God and given a vision that there were hungry people all over the world. And it was commanded to him that he was to help feed God's hungry people.
And where did he go with that?
You know, it started out, with somewhat with a bang. He had traveled the world as an evangelist and a church planter and a broadcaster on Christian television and radio. Then all of a sudden became the humanitarian. And, we started in Africa delivering a lot of food. And along the way, we've owned ships, we've owned airplanes, transport aircraft like a C-130. And now we use other forms of transportation. But God has enabled us to deliver literally hundreds of millions of pounds of food and, all over the world.
It's worth noting the very significant departure in his life and ministry from evangelism, getting the faith out there and broadcasting it to that humanitarian work. It's a very big difference, isn't there?
Oh, there's a huge difference. And certainly my father had a heart and compassion for the world and for people who were hungry and destitute and needy. And, I've been with him in various crusades around the world. And as you mentioned earlier, had the privilege of growing up in a lot of places around the world, like in the Philippines and Hong Kong and Israel, and traveled with him to Africa many times. But we really didn't focus on the humanitarian effort until beginning in the late 80s. And it really was an incredible departure in his life, where on one hand, he was always talking about reaching people for Christ through electronic means and churches and crusades. And then all of a sudden now we've kind of shifted where the most important thing in his life was working with people and feeding hungry people around the world.
With such a significant figure as your father was, what was it like for the son to take on such a mantle, such a weight of responsibility?
Well, it would take a lot of different people to step into his shoes. And certainly I don't have the evangelistic or the preaching, aspect that my father had and was blessed with. But we've been left with a great foundation to build on and a lot of friends and a lot of great people around the world, such as Pastor Pringle here in Australia. And my dad visited Australia many times. In fact, Australia in 1930 was the first foreign country my dad visited in his missions around the world. So Australia has always played a very, very big role in his ministry and in ours.
Any particular reason why Australia, of all nations?
Well, you know, it actually goes back to a gentleman, an Englishman by the name of Howard Carter, who he met in Hot Springs, Arkansas in the United States. And Howard Carter said, come to Australia and we'll travel together. And my dad was just a young man at that time. And he ended up going to the West Coast and bought a ticket on a steamer going to Australia, had $12 in his pocket, and came to Australia and met up with Howard Carter. And they traveled the world together until World War II started, actually.
Amazing story. With your work with Feed the Hungry, it's a phenomenal effort that you undertake, $200 million worth of aid to 93 countries. But the problem of world hunger is so phenomenal in itself. How do you decide where the aid goes, or I suppose where the aid doesn't go to?
You know, that's a big problem, and it's a good question. One of the challenges that we have is that we feel that we need to be working through local partners in each individual country who can minister to people in a spiritual way, in addition to a food concept. And so, you know, we don't work with governments necessarily. We don't work with secular organizations necessarily. We try to work strictly through ministry partners on the ground, so that they're actually doing the distribution and drawing people to them. Our Every Child, Every Day program, for instance, around the world, where we're feeding kids in 20 different nations food every single day, and we're probably the only food that they receive during the course of the day. We work strictly through ministry partners so that the kids are getting a ministry and an education background in addition to being fed a hot meal.
Yeah. Tell us about that Takeaway Hunger program. Mm-hmm. How does it work?
You know, for every $6 that's contributed, we can feed, we can supply 100 meals. And it's a terrific, terrific opportunity. And the way we do that, actually, is a lot of the food and supplies is donated. We work with ministry partners on the ground to do the distribution. Consequently, our biggest expense is the transportation and gathering the food together and getting it from point A to point B. And so our costs are very low. And yet we're able to make a big impact with it. I'm sure there are places we could go and do a food distribution, but it wouldn't have a Christ-oriented mission to it. And so, you know, we try to stick with ministry partners because that's what we're called to do. There's other organizations that do other kind of feeding, and that's good. That's good for them, but that's not what we've been called to do.
Yes, it's important to say that this is done in the name of Jesus Christ. How would you describe what that means to people?
The easiest way to bring people to Christ is at a young age. And we believe it's very important at a young age, as well as adults, to be able to feed them and minister them both in the body, soul, and spirit. And, you know, some of the work that we've been able to do in the last few months, for instance, in Eastern Africa, where there's been drought and civil war and reaching out to families, you know, where some people we were told had been walking, you know, for up to 3 days with no water or food, and were able to get to a refugee camp where we were able to supply food working through a ministry partner on the ground. And they said this was the first food we've had in days. And, you know, they've seen the horror that goes along with it of people dying along the way and that kind of thing. And again, kids in Africa, in Uganda and Kenya and Ethiopia, we're working with ministry partners on the ground where kids maybe have lost one or both parents to AIDS or other kind of disease or starvation. And we've been able to work with them to get them food so that they can come to school and they can get an education, they can be taught the Word of God in addition to get a good meal.
I can imagine the level of discomfort that you feel in bridging the two worlds between the prosperous West and such overwhelming need around the world.
It is startling to go to a place like Haiti and see the unbelievable devastation that's still there, that the desperate food situation that people have, the sickness, the cholera, et cetera, that's ongoing in that nation, and know that, you know, in the Western world, not just the United States, but a lot of the Western world, you know, people are completely unattached from the needs and the desperation that a lot of the world lives in.
If, as you say, you do this in the name of Jesus, when you see Jesus' passion for the poor, especially for children, and the searing critique of the Bible of those who do not meet the needs of the poor, do you feel a sense of unease or even anger when you see the church not doing enough as it perhaps should?
You know, you can. You know, I recently was reading in a business journal about a church in a state in the United States that's building a new auditorium. It's going to cost $37 million. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, why spend $37 million on a church building, you know, that'll house you know, several thousand people, when a lot of that money could be used, you know, to feeding hungry people. But, you know, our ministry also is involved in broadcasting, which, you know, here at Hope Radio, you know, is not inexpensive to do too. So,
yes,
you know, that's a challenge that you have to live with and work with on a daily basis.
On Open House, we're with Peter Sumrall from the Feed the Hungry organization. Peter, you've seen so much of the world, you've experienced so much of humanity, and your organization in so many ways, different ways, touches millions of people. How would you say your own faith has grown or matured or developed through that wealth of experiences from that, young man mm-hmm. who went on the air for the first time at 15 mm-hmm. under his father's wing.
You know, it's been a remarkable journey. I've been blessed to be able to travel a lot of the world. You know, I recall, you know, being in the Philippines, for instance, and on one hand, you know, seeing unbelievable destitute poverty and literally going around the corner to a gentleman's home where we were invited for lunch, who was a multi-millionaire, and platters of food laying out all over the place, and almost feeling disgust that my father and the rest of us felt of, you know, how can we be doing this when people just on the other side of the wall are starving to death? You know, it is a challenge, but it's been a great walk, and I've been privileged to be able to see both sides of the world, where I've seen the excess of the West and I've seen the desperation of the poor. And certainly in the last few years, as I've become more and more involved in Feed the Hungry, I've had a stronger and stronger desire to make sure that we do reach out to the lost, the last and the least, as my dad used to say, and bless people. Another slogan that my dad used is that there's untold billions who are yet untold. And the easiest way to be able to tell them about Jesus Christ is if they're not starving to death. And so that's where Feed the Hungry plays a very important role.
Do you ever ask God, or are you ever puzzled about why God allows such hunger and such need and such a disparity in this world?
You know, you try and analyze it. You ask God why, but then you also have to ask God, why is there tsunamis? Why are there earthquakes? You know, why is there violence in the world and that kind of thing? And you have to leave it in the hands of God. And one day, you know, when we get to heaven, we'll maybe find out some of those answers. But there's a lot of people who try and analyze and think that through, and that there really isn't a good answer other than the fact we live in a very, you know, sinful world, and we have to do our part to try and help as many people as possible.
Yes, you roll your sleeves up and get the work done. In terms of communication, which is your business as well, are there ways in which we have to keep looking afresh at methods of communicating Christian faith in this world, recognizing the need to be true to that faith, but also recognizing the enormous ways in which the world is changing, people changing, and communications are changing?
You know, the world is evolving so quick in digital technology, et cetera, you know, whether it's using a mobile phone or an iPad or an iPod or, you know, satellite radio or television, the internet. You know, we've been blessed to have our feet both in the old technology of high-powered international shortwave radio, in addition to, you know, digital television and digital radio and the internet and that sort of thing. And so I think that the church in particular has got to stay on the cutting edge. One of the very first programs on radio in the United States was Christian radio, Christian churches and evangelists and ministers. And I'm not sure that we've kept up with technology as well as we can. And I think that's something that we need to make sure we stay on top of. You know, I personally no longer, you know, buy a CD anymore. I download it off iTunes. And,
totally.
You know, I download books onto my iPad and that kind of thing. And so I think the church needs to make sure that we stay in tune with, you know, where technology is going and stay in front of it and not be behind it.
And to live it out as well. Perhaps in addition to what we say, people will look much more at actions and deeds rather than just mere words.
Boy, that's true. And, you know, it's very important for people to know that, you know, Christian television, the evangelist, et cetera, you know, there's in virtually any industry, whether it's secular or Christian, there's going to be a few bad apples.
And we've known them.
And it's unfortunate just about anywhere in the world. You know, but the overall good that Christian radio and television does, I believe, far outweighs some of the negatives that have happened, you know, primarily in the U.S. And so the bottom line is to reach as many people with the gospel.
Yes.
And that's been our mission for many, many years.
From your extensive experience in broadcasting and the feedback, no doubt, that you get, are there stories that you can relate to us where you've had people's lives being totally transformed by the work that you do?
In the United States, we have a prayer line operation where people can call in for prayer. And, you know, we answer probably 200,000 or more prayer requests a year. And You know, I'll never forget, though, that a number of years ago, right after we started our international shortwave radio ministry, we received a letter from a gentleman who was in Africa, and it was a period of drought and a period of famine, and he was able to write a letter, and he said, you know, tonight my stomach may be hungry, but my spirit is full because I listened to your radio, World Harvest Radio. Our ministry also has been instrumental in distributing free Bibles around the world, and we've sent out in the last 10 years over 600,000 Bibles, and every one of them is individually requested. We just don't take a large amount of Bibles and dump them on some missionary in some foreign land and hope they do some good. Everyone is requested either via email or a letter or some way like that, and probably 60% of these Bibles have ended up in Africa. And so it's been an amazing process for us to know. I mean, I was in Owassa, Ethiopia, in a Feed the Hungry food distribution, and we were working in conjunction with an American pastor by the name of Billy Joe Doherty, Victory Christian Center out of Tulsa. And he was having a fabulous crusade there in Owassa. And we were doing a food distribution in conjunction with his ministry. And we did a Bible distribution at the same time. And it was startling to me to hear that in that particular location, a Bible, it was the value of 1 month's salary. Now, whether you're here in Australia or whether you're in the United States or any other Western country, would somebody set aside 1 month's salary to buy a Bible? And the answer is probably not. I mean, you've got to buy food. You've got to take care of your kids. You've got to make a house payment and other kind of, you know, debts and taxes, et cetera. You can't set aside that kind of money to buy a Bible. And so for us to be able to distribute a free Bible to people all over the world really is one of, I think, the key ministry things that we're able to do.
Much to be grateful for in the West. Peter Summerall, it's been a privilege meeting you and talking with you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And we'll post the details up on our Open House Community Facebook page of the Le Sea Broadcasting and Feed the Hungry. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.